You know, we do these, like, seconds of silence to get, let the mic get some room tone for me, but then Bailey just absolutely ruins it with,
I mean, our cats just have very good comedic timing, Zach. I don't, like, both of them are skilled.
She just sounds like an old parrot on a pirate ship.
Yeah.
Polly, want a cracker?
Bailey, want they churro? Meow. Wow.
She doesn't like that we're making fun of her.
Wow. Wow.
I know.
I know. I like putting a little stink on it sometimes.
A little some stank.
Wow.
A little bean stank.
Wow.
Bean stank sounds like a fart. And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I don't know.
You don't know?
I just...
I feel like every time we get a new doctor, you feel like you gotta there's like a reset. You're like, I don't know what's going to happen anymore.
I have a reset where I like... Because it's me being like, whoa, I'm watching this show for the first time. and there's just that little part of me that's like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? Meanwhile, I was the one that was insistent that we drive to San Diego coming up to go to the Comic-Con Museum because they have... a Doctor Who exhibit, and in my defense, it's not that I want to go and see the stuff. I work in theater now. I like to see how professionals do their jobs.
Hey, you want to go see the lineup of costumes that they have?
Yes.
Yeah, we might have our first video podcast in a few weeks.
Maybe.
Because I plan on bringing a camera to that for sure.
Oh, Patreon exclusive.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see how that goes. I don't know. It might be fun. But today we're going to watch Series 8, Episode 4, Listen.
Yeah.
We did this bit last week, Cass, so we can't do it again.
Funny every time.
yes, this is Listen. If you remember a few weeks ago, I told you that I had gone to a like tiny Doctor Who convention. I think it was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was in Oklahoma somewhere. I can't remember exactly where.
Mm-hmm.
But it was literally like in not even like a, it wasn't even a theater. It was like a. It felt like a bar they had shut down.
I was going to say, in my memory, you rolled up to a defunct diner. I don't think that was the case, but I really
like
that image.
No, because I've been in diners bigger than that building.
Jeez.
I really think it was like a rented entertainment space that was like...
Like
an 40 or 50 square feet.
Like an auditorium, like a school's auditorium with a stage is yeah, what
like
I'm imagining.
Like a small school auditorium.
Okay, remember, I went to Catholic schools.
Yeah. I went to private schools. Like, it was smaller than my school's auditorium.
Okay, but when I say auditorium, I don't know. I didn't go to... Zach, my family was very rich and well off.
Of course, you owned a home in California.
Yeah. Me as a kid being like, oh my God, like... We're just making ends meet. My mom
was
said,
a kid being like, "Oh, the alligators in the moat are craving food once again."
Mom said I couldn't get another box of cereal. Oh, we must be poor. Yeah,
but what
I'm sniffing out my privilege. The older I get, I go, "Oh."
But at the end of that day at this Doctor Who convention, the sort of ending celebration was that everyone there was going to watch the new episode of Doctor Who coming out that day live together. And this was that episode. So we all watched it on a big projector. It was sweet. I have fond memories of it, so I can't.
I'm saying, is like a that is like a hometown.
Yeah. This is like
Oklahoma.
It was
story.
A convention center of less than 100 people, including people who worked at the convention.
You cannot have that kind of experience here.
Yeah, no. It's like because everyone was there for it, but it was fun. It was a nice little like you know, community small town Oklahoma thing. Yeah, exactly. People drove from all over to come do
that's
it.
Really, that's it's I'm not saying this as like I don't mean it in a negative way. That's really cute. That's so cute. And I know it sounds like I'm being sarcastic. I don't know how to say things in any other way.
I don't know how to say this without sounding like you're a big dummy, but you're a big dummy.
How else would I say I that's so cute?
I know it is. It is sweet. I do think it's cute. And especially remembering, like, again, it was a very small room that, with like less also, than 100 people total. So the lights dimmed and we all just watched it. It was very sweet.
Were you at least sitting in a chair, or did you just have to sit crisscross on the floor?
No, there were different spots. I mean, I wasn't like, I don't think I was in a chair. I think I chose to stand, but there were places to sit.
Oh, because you were cool guy.
Guy leaning against the wall.
Only cool guys stand in auditoriums.
Well, I had met some people there and we were all kind of hanging out.
Gotcha. Did you dress up?
Yes, I dressed up as 11.
I'm not surprised.
Well, it was I had done that same outfit for the 50th anniversary, so I just whipped it out again.
Anybody else dress up? I'm curious now.
Yeah, there were loads of people dressed up. There were someone brought in a homemade TARDIS. I think there might have been a canine.
I was about to make a joke about the homemade TARDIS. A canine, you say? Was it an actual dog?
No, I mean, it was like a shell.
I just realized I could get an RC car from the thrift and make my own cardboard canine.
We are getting way off track here.
Hey, I just for our listeners, know that I was awake until 5 a.m. doing things for work. Went to bed for 4 hours and then got up so I could record a podcast before going back to work. So
she's a little loopy right now.
So don't say I don't make sacrifices.
For this Doctor Whoey.
For this thing that I do out of sheer love in my heart for my partner. However, if you want to make it more my while, we do have a Patreon.
Yeah, we do have a Patreon. If you would like to contribute to making this feel more like Cassie's not just doing this for me.
I'll start making merch.
We'll have some just a little guy buttons.
Yeah. I got a whole bunch of ideas. I can't share them because you don't pay me to do that. But
I don't pay you at all.
I'm talking about them, Zach.
Oh, them.
They don't pay me at all. I don't even know if they like me.
Turns out everyone that listens to this podcast is just tuning in for me, waiting for me to like attack you for like vengeance.
I did have the thought because you were like, I can just do like my own episode. And I was like, I don't think
it's the same.
I don't think the listeners would like that. I think they're all showing up for me.
I think they show up for us.
I don't think that at all. Not all the time.
But we should get back to the episode proper, especially because as you did not get a lot of sleep, I want to make sure that we're not dragging this out for you. So let's get to the Cassie Rafassi for Listen.
Okay.
In this episode, the Doctor becomes obsessed with a creature that has the perfect ability to do what? Hunt, defend, or hide?
Hunt, defend, or hide. Hunt or hide are my two.
Okay.
Gonna narrow those down. If the episode is called Listen, I imagine and I feel like you will tell me they're doing a lot of listening in this.
It's just the Doctor and Clara sitting down for a podcast.
Well, in the world of one name, one word titles, we have Listen and Blink.
We also have Hide.
And Hide. So based off of Hide and Blink, the not so popular hide and seek variant, where everybody stands in a circle covering their eyes and the first person who looks loses.
So you're expecting this to be a horror episode?
Maybe. Horror adjacent, perhaps. Who's the writer?
I believe this was Stephen Moffat.
Okay, so that is par for the course then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so hide or hunt. And you would have to listen to, like, suss it out. I think hiding is more interesting.
Okay.
Because a creature that's very good at hunting, like, okay, we have tigers.
We already have weeping angels.
Like, we literally have, like, everybody has at least one, or most people have at least one perfect hunter in their home. I'm talking about cats. Pound for pound. Wondrous timing, my love. Excellent work. I hope
the microphone picked up that loud meow.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd be so sad if it didn't.
I don't know that it did, but you can just superimpose it. Yeah, pound for pound, felines, like house cats, are some of the most efficient hunters in the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
Because
they're God's perfect killing machine. They would have ruled the world if they weren't the size of a loaf of bread.
Aw, and if they just weren't so small and so dumb. Anyways, so I'm going to go with hide.
Okay. All right. So Cassie's prediction is the doctor becomes obsessed with a creature with a perfected ability to hide.
I just think that's way scarier.
And I'm doing a little bit of... I've gotten into a little bit of a trend here with asking you one question that I think is fair and one question that I think is more to flex your creative muscles a little bit here.
AKA one question that is fair and one question that is unfair.
I have tried to add an addendum here to make it a little more fair, but in this episode, the doctor posits that everyone has the same dream as a child.
Same dream as a child.
Yeah, everyone in the universe, when they are a child, all at some point has this same dream.
And I imagine the dream is not. Oh, I guess that's the question, isn't it?
Yeah. What do you think that dream is? If any part of your dream description is correct, I will give you the point.
So I'm going to say what it's not.
Okay.
Because this was a recurring dream I had of having a lady I didn't know roll up to my front yard or roll up to my my childhood home in a yellow Volkswagen Bug and then kidnap me. I don't think. Well, I don't know, because my mom was a young person in the 70s. And do you know who else had a yellow Volkswagen Bug?
Your mom?
No.
Oh.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh.
So I had the thought one day, as in moments ago, of, oh, damn, maybe I just had generational fear bred into me.
I like the hard swing of being like, your mom? And you're like, no, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. I mean, Volkswagen today. Volkswagen has had to do a lot of PR covering over the past centennial, let me tell you what.
It's the hard swing there. I was just like, hey, hey, it looks like you're writing something down there. Is that a nice letter for your dad? No, it's an essay about Ed Gein.
Yes.
I don't know, man. Different
strokes, but that's all normal to me. I did a history presentation on the Donner Party. And then when my professor was like, why did you choose the Donner Party? And I went, because, it's a really tragic story. Yeah, it was a really tragic story. Not me saying, oh, I wanted to talk a lot about how they, before they ate the people that were dying around them, they ate their shoes because they were made out of leather and organic material so they could cook it up into a little gelatinous soup. Anyways, a dream that every child has. May I ask what kind of things you dreamt about since established?
I'm really bad at remembering my dreams.
You are notoriously bad about remembering
like
your dreams.
The only
even as a kid, there isn't one that stood out and has since become a core memory.
I mean, I have a very vague one of like a dog attacking me. And I think that was because when I was like in second grade or so, I had it would have been like fourth grade. I think he was in second grade. He was a couple years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a guy that lived like two doors down from me, and he had a huge scar on his face from where a dog bit him.
Okay.
And so I think I had like internalized that and had a nightmare about that.
That every dog will bite you.
Yeah. And you know, my current like unsubstantiated fear is that one day I will walk into the garage and there will just be a full grown deer standing there staring at me.
So funny. I'm cooking something. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but I'm cooking something up. It's gonna be very good.
Yeah, just I don't know what it was, just at some point that
it's Chekhov's deer.
Because we brought it up so many times now.
Now may I ask, is it a dream as in something that you, when you go to bed, you dream of this thing? Or is it something, a dream of like when you're a kid, everybody wants to be, or at
is
least
it when you sleep dream?
Okay. Because I realized, I was talking to a group of coworkers and we all realized at the same time that at some point we all wanted to be dolphin trainers. I was like, I thought this was just me. I am elated that we all went dolphin trainer and then we all watched Blackfish and went.
Yeah, no, this is not an aspiration. This is okay. Everyone shares the same REM sleep cycle dream.
Okay. All right. So what is a common thing to dream about when you are a child that isn't getting kidnapped by a woman who looks like Jeffrey Dahmer? See, but now I'm thinking, oh, no. Is this episode going to be about Freddy Krueger, notorious scary man sleep?
Doctor Who meets Freddy.
You can run, but you can't hide, bitch.
This is God.
My only experience with Freddy Krueger is Scary Terry on that one Rick and Morty episode.
Yeah, I can't get it. Freddy is just too weird for me to find him horrifying. There's a part in it where he's like in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, he's got like really, really long arms. And I understand that at the time, a lot of it was like, these are like film tricks that should make him feel impossible. But in the context of like modern day film, it really does look like he's just like, come give me a hug.
All right. So what is a dream? What is a dream?
Dream, 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 dream.
Like, I'm really having a hard time.
I will, if it helps you, I will tell you it is a nightmare specifically. It is not.
Okay.
Just to help you narrow it down a little bit. Like I said, you don't have to get it all right. You just got to get, if there's like
it's a thing children.
Yeah, it is specifically a child's dream.
I would say then if it is a nightmare, because this is also another one that I experienced. Okay. This is, stay with me. Come with me on this journey. Stay with me. Hold my hand.
Tra-la-la-la-la. Skipping down the way.
It is a dream of like when you are in a comfortable place, but that place starts to turn.
Okay.
Comfortable place can also, I'm not talking about a physical building. It could also be like, oh, the comfortable space is like behind my mom's legs when I'm like meeting somebody new. But then when you look up, you realize that that person is not your mom. It is, in fact, Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. But something like that, where it's a safe space that has turned,
I'll say evil. I don't necessarily mean like evil, evil, but.
And then that feeling that you are being left behind, mm-hmm. or that like everybody has abandoned you and you are just like left to fend for yourself.
Okay. So you're picturing like a space of comfort. So you're almost picturing like that scene from Toy Story 2 where you're like,
yes.
Like I don't want to play with you anymore.
Bye, Woody.
Okay, but a space of comfort that twists
like
that. Into.
Like
okay.
Yeah, like you are Woody in that situation of just like, oh, I'm in the arms of somebody I love. And oh, no, they're now leaving me. They're abandoning me. They are not the same as they were.
Okay. All right. So
I don't know how I would write that down. It's not as, I don't think it's as silly as you want, but you know.
I wanted to see what your mind came up with. That was all.
It's either that or like a lot of spiders.
Just so many spiders.
Just absolutely swarms of spiders.
Yeah, can you imagine if that's right? If this is Doctor Who versus the spiders that can perfectly hide.
Or something to do with a closet. Because like kids are.
Like Monsters, Inc.
Yeah. Like, you know, I had the inverse where I would hide in my closet a lot because I liked that it was a small, dark, like.
So where was the monster for you if they weren't in the closet?
Oh, under the bed.
Under the bed.
Yeah. Well, because that's also the thing, too, is I couldn't sleep with my closet door open because it made the room feel very small. And that was scary to me. I needed the door open. I still do it. Mm-hmm. Like, even today, like, we have our closet door open because when it's closed, I'm more worried about it opening than I am about something being in the closet.
Interesting.
Same with, like, bathrooms. When I was younger, I was terrified of E.T. So any bathroom I went into that had a shower curtain, I was like, yay!
When my little brother was a little kid, my mom likes to say this all the time, is that when my brother was very little, like, I think 5 or younger, whenever we would go out in the backyard, my little brother would turn around and be like, don't close the door, okay?
That's so cute.
And that just feels like you in every room. Don't close the door, okay? Don't close the shower, okay?
Yeah. Anyways, if I get any one of those things that I've said right, do I get a point?
Yes, I will. I will include that as a
point. Hooray!
All right.
So abandonment, closets, showers.
Monster.
I mean, that's a, I don't think you would give me monsters. Unless it's like monsters in closet.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll find out together if the doctor is obsessed with a creature that has the perfected ability to hide. And if any of what Cassie said about that dream is what the doctor says is a dream everyone has.
I don't think any of those are correct.
You don't think any of that's correct?
No, but it's also 22 minutes in and I want to.
We need to get going here. Yeah. So let's find out if any of that is accurate as we watch Series 8, Episode 4. Listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
Uh-huh.
Now don't do that again.
Do what?
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by... Wait. Me falling off of a cliff! Back from listen. So what'd you think, Cassie?
I don't know. I liked it and then I didn't.
Really?
And then it circled back around on me.
Okay. I feel like that's a good way of describing Moffat's run on Doctor Who in general. That's a real way to compress it down in time in the span of an episode. I liked it and then I didn't. And then I liked it again.
Yeah.
You've just described every Doctor Who fan's relationship with this era of the show.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. I think what it's this is one of those episodes where I think when I had watched it the first time.
I can't imagine having. Well, I don't know. This is one of the episodes we've watched. This one feels the most like Doctor Who-y in the sense of I was just going to say, I can't imagine watching this and having this be the like, oh, we're all going to watch the new Doctor Who episode all together, gang. But I'm also like, no, if you're going to be watching it with a group of people, a group of other Doctor Who like super fans.
Yeah, like this couldn't be someone's first episode, but this could be but for a group of people who all drove however long in Oklahoma to the middle of nowhere to watch this in a warehouse together.
Yeah. In a classroom, effectively, from what you're describing.
Yeah, it certainly felt like it. I think when I had first watched it, now keep in mind, I had first watched it, quote unquote, twice.
Yeah.
Because I saw one. This was the last like leaked episode I had seen before all the effects had been put in.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got to watch it for real with the group at that convention.
Yeah.
Had you
seen it again?
Prior, I had not. And that was
prior to us. Prior to your episode prep.
I rewatched this era once. So I have seen, every episode in this era at least twice. The original time I watched it. And then when I did a rewatch a few years ago. And I will say, I grow to appreciate it more the more I watch it. And I think it's because I the first time I watched it, I didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because when you hear horror episode from Stephen Moffat, like there's a certain idea of what that's going to be.
You think it's going to be Blink.
It's going to be Blink or even just The Empty Child.
Yeah.
Or Hyde or, you know, some other like. Monster like there is it.
Yeah,
but this is the doctor in this episode has decided there is a monster, but the only thing he's really fearing is fear itself. And it took me some time to like really I guess accept that.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my mind when I first watched it, I was like, well, what was the thing? We never saw the thing. And I feel kind of stupid in hindsight because I'm like, oh no, the whole point is that there wasn't. The point is that the doctor that they were scaring themselves.
Yeah.
They were They were afraid of a gap of knowledge.
It's the same way that, like, when I am up very late at night, mm-hmm. because I'm a witchy adjacent person. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm very in tuned. But, like, especially considering where we live, because we are right up against what is part of the LA River. So there is constantly water going through. I'm not going to say precisely where it is, but, you know, very close to what is very close to where we live. So I get a little freaked out, especially late at night, because our yard is so unbelievably, like, unnaturally dark. And there is a riverway right behind our house. When I am up very late at night working, I am convinced that there is stuff looking at me from outside if I have the windows open, like very mini Appalachian in our backyard. And so there have been times, like, it happened last night, actually, when I was last night / very early this morning when I was working, where my phone just started getting quiet. Mm-hmm. I had it up on full volume and it just started getting quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have any explanation for it. And so I was like, OK, whoever is here, you need to go. You need to stop. Stop messing with my tech. You go get back outside. I don't know how you got in. Get. Scram. My favorite things to say to pets, children, and now ghosts or whatever rampant feral spirits are in our backyard at the wee hours of the morning. That is to say, there is something very humanizing then about giving the doctor that same quality of, like, for the doctor, it would be like, oh, it's an alien. It's something that it's unexplainable. But for somebody like me, it's that's a ghost. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is I really like that the doctor believes in ghosts,
mm-hmm.
and his way of coping with and dealing with something that he can't quite explain is to speak at it aloud.
Well, because I think
there is something very grounding about that I really, really liked.
Yeah,
because I feel like that's a universal experience. Mm-hmm. When you're stressed out about something, whether or not it's a fear response, but when your body is in a state of stress, I can't think of a single person who internalizes their stress. Internalizing in those way of like, oh, well, like when I'm really stressed, I just think things. No. Everybody, when they are in some form of duress, is speaking out loud,
mm-hmm.
either to themselves or to whoever might be in the room or within earshot. But that I feel like is a very common experience to just like, I don't know what's happening. And I'm just going to do self-soothing. I'm going to sing aloud to myself because it's a little silly. And if anybody hears me being a little silly, they're going to laugh. And that's another response that I like. Otherwise, I'm just trying not to go completely insane. And I'm just going to try really hard to not lose my mind.
I do think it's amusing. Like, if you go back and watch the beginning of the episode again, the story really is just the doctor has spun himself up into a tizzy. Like, he basically just started talking to himself until he was glass sharking himself.
He was glass sharking himself. That is a wonderful, for anybody who is not familiar, it's a bit from one of the McElroys. It's an older episode
where Justin was talking about swimming in a pool and I could have the joke thought. It's like, wouldn't it be funny if there was a shark in this pool? And that thought would eventually become, fuck, there is a shark in this pool.
Yeah. But it's a shark you can't see.
Because it's a clear glass pool. Shark. Yeah, glass shark. And so that's what the doctor has done. The doctor was just like, huh, we have got creatures that are like perfect hunters. And we've got creatures with like perfect defense. We don't know about a creature that hides perfectly unless there is. And he's here right now.
Unless the
staring at me.
Creature is in the room with us. It wrote on my chalkboard in my handwriting.
Does one of my, it's one of my internal vocal stims. Simply, what would you do? Something about that sentence being said in like being yelled in Capaldi's accent is really fun to do.
There are certain phrases said in a Scottish accent that. And if you had the chance to change your fate, would you? Because do you think that when I'm stimming out, I'm just walking around going, would you?
So the ultimate Scottish sentence is, if you had the chance to change your fate, what would you do?
Yeah, would you? There's something about chance in Scottish accents that's really comforting and just a delight.
Yeah, I think the more I watch this episode, the more I appreciate it. I have come to find that Moffat sort of deconstructing almost narrative. He's deconstructing fear, really, which is just... The fear is a lack of knowledge.
Fear is a lack of knowledge. Fear can also be a superpower, which just is not a thing for me to learn right now as somebody who is constantly stressed and anxious. Me learning that fear makes me better and more strong. Quicker and better at getting things done.
Yeah, Moffat, that's not fear, that's adrenaline. There's a difference.
No. Zach, now I've learned that my fear is completely valid.
Don't take your anxiety medication. It will make you weak.
Yeah, my anxiety makes me stronger and better than everybody else.
You can run faster, jump higher.
Mom's spaghetti. Anyways.
Yeah, it's a very, I don't know that you thought through it perfectly, but there is something about it that's, I think, especially for a show directed ostensibly at children, like it's a family show.
Yeah.
But for a show that does have children as a target demographic, I do think that's a good, like, hey, it's okay to be afraid sometimes.
Yes, it does feel very, I mean, it, I guess it, they're one of the same. I was going to say it feels very PBS, but I'm like, this is the BBC. That is British PBS.
Basically.
So. I have to remind myself that every so often.
Yep, a little bit. And this is their big thing, so they got to make sure that as many people in the world want to watch it as possible.
Oh my God, does that make Doctor Who there, Mr. Rogers?
Doctor.
Just angrier and Scottisher?
Instead of puppet, instead of like puppet playtime, he gets Daleks.
Yeah. Could you... The doctor coming in after an adventure. It's a beautiful day in the TARDIS. Would you be mine? Could you?
Won't you be my companion?
Yeah. Oh, that's gonna tickle me. Pink. Speaking of pink.
Well, let's quickly just get you your Cassie Raffassi points because you do get 2 points today.
I get 2 points.
Because in fact, this episode was about the doctor getting obsessed.
I think I'll still accept both. Because Hyde was correct.
Mm-hmm.
Abandonment / fear and the like being in a comfortable place, your bedroom, and then having that comfortable place turn bad, aka monster hand sticking out from under your bed, because that is absolutely, even to this day, if you watch me, if there's a certain hour where my TikTok out or not, yeah, sure, where my algorithm turns into the scariest things I've ever seen on the internet. And I don't like it, but there is a certain point where I will be hanging out on the bed. And then once that algorithm realizes what time it is and it starts showing me scary videos from the Appalachian Mountains or people encountering like alien paranormal stuff, you'll see my feet go from hanging off the bed and kicking and having an awesome time to curling up inside of my body because I've realized, oh fuck, my feet have been off the bed for too long. There is something about to touch it. One time, Monty, again with his outstanding comedic timing, that was the moment that he decided to come out from under the bed and then brush his fucking tail up against my foot.
Uh-huh.
I almost had a panic attack.
Yeah, it was also that you had specifically mentioned, you know, having to hide in your closet because of the monster under your bed. I was like, well, that hits the nail on the head. That's exactly what the dream is, the monster under the bed.
Fear.
But you also had mentioned starting in a place. So even before that, you had said starting in a place of comfort. And I was like that. Well, that starts with you wake up in bed.
Yeah.
Like I would have counted that even before then. But the fact that we got to the monsters under the bed, I was like, cool. Nail on the head. We don't have to worry about it. I did enjoy hearing your response to him describing the dream. And then you see the hand come out and grab that the various ankles and you went, nope.
Yeah, even now, look at where my feet are.
There's a monster under the couch.
There is. It's called Monty, and he's going to do the thing again where he surprises me with this fucking periscope tail. Anyways.
Yeah, you get both points today. So
I'm at 158 out of 242.
Oh, we've done a lot of these.
Yeah.
So many questions, so few answers.
Yeah.
Let's get to the episode itself, because the episode has we have the overarching plot of the Doctor talking, glass sharking himself.
Glass sharking the Doctor, believing in ghosts.
Yeah, believing in some creature that can.
Believing in the paranormal, which I think that of the Doctors, this one might be the one that is most suspicious of the paranormal. And by that, I mean ghosts.
I guess paranormal would be that, because I say aliens are paranormal, but that's just normal for the Doctor. The Doctor is an alien.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I guess if we're talking about it in like the concept
like superstitions,
of,
like that's more the Doctor perhaps is not superstitious, but he's a little stitious.
I think the other running plot here is Clara and Danny having a little date night.
A date night that starts really good and then goes bad and then becomes okay again and then goes bad again.
And then they both apologize like adults.
Yeah.
I think that they found a way to make it very genuine where it was just like they were kind of like talking and laughing and then maybe some like insecurities come out as jokes. But the jokes flare the opposite insecurities. Like where they the first thing that sets it off is Clara talking about one girl who's really mean to her, one of their students who's really mean and says that her face is too wide. She's like, God, I could kill these kids sometimes. And he's like, I could too. And Clara goes, well, from you, that means something. And
that's just such an insensitive thing to say, though, to somebody who is ex-military.
Yeah, well, I also get that, like, Clara might be nervous about that, just because it is. I obviously have never experienced it personally, but I can imagine it being at least something sitting in the back of your mind, knowing, hey, the person I'm sitting across from, justified or not, killed somebody.
I mean, I'm related to one. Yeah.
And so, well, I was being that it's like it's I can imagine it being difficult to truly get away from.
I mean, speaking from that personal experience, it is hard to. There will be times where, like, I am having a perfectly pleasant conversation with my brother. We're commiserating over customer service stuff and, you know, rebuilding a connection, rebuilding a friendship. But there is that little thing of, like, he and I have dramatically different, like, early to mid-20s lives. Mm-hmm. And he has even said, and he'll make it clear, especially after if he's really hopped up about something, he is not shy in the reminding you, like, your life is different from mine. I have seen things that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. Mm-hmm. Like, not disrespecting you and the stuff that you've been through, but be happy that you haven't had to do what I did. Mm-hmm. And so I can, and that's family, that's kin, that is,
yeah,
you know, that's us trying to work through our differences and then say, well, like, you don't know what it's like. Mm-hmm. Like being the last of three children, all that stuff. Yeah. Then we fight and don't talk for 6 months and then we come back together and are stronger than ever. It's just how that it's just how that cycle goes. We're working through it. But I don't know how that dynamic shifts when you are meeting somebody and in that getting to know you. In that getting to know you
phase,
I suppose, just that circle is such a strange one to be in when you are interested enough in another person, especially since they're coworkers. Mm-hmm. Which this is important for future. I'm going to bring this up again later. Like when you are coworkers and you have somebody that you are interested enough in getting to know that you're like, I want to get to know you outside of the workspace. Mm-hmm. I think that we would really get along, not, you know, needing to use specific language and then bar specific conversations because other people are listening and watching. Mm-hmm. So branching that out and having that be a first date, but then having that first date and this like first outside of the workspace interaction then be colored by so much prejudice about what your life was prior to the life that you are leading now.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's definitely a real sensitive subject for Danny.
Well, yeah.
Because it's not just because the students brought it up. The last time we saw him, and so
he cried because yeah. he's a sensitive boy. I do like them panning back to him being like, I dug 23 trenches
and 23 wells.
I dug 23 wells.
I saved villages. I wasn't like attacking people. I was saving people. It was like,
I saved more people than I killed.
Yeah. Stuff like that, where I was just like, okay, why did you count how many wells you dug?
Why wouldn't you? 23 is an impressive number.
That is an impressive number.
I remember every single big hole I dug at the beach when I was a kid. All right.
That's why you call them trenches, because you were thinking about the trenches you dug.
Yeah. There was one. It was so scary. The lifeguard got really mad at me, so I had to immediately fill it. But I had been working on this hole all day. It certainly wasn't. It was big enough that when I was inside of it, I could duck my head just slightly and then be completely like standing in the hole. So it had to have been at least 5 feet deep. And then I had to build a like ladder system in the hole because it was also big there. I wasn't allowed to. This was after one of my. This was after one of my many surgeries as a child. So I couldn't get anything fully submerged. So I could only dig the hole because we were there for like a thing for my sister. I don't know. So I spent the entire day digging this hole.
Wow.
And the lifeguard was like, hey, man, you did this all by yourself. And I went, yep. And he went, awesome job, homie. But I mean, he didn't say that. He was like, wow.
Awesome job, dude. Can you please refill this right now?
Very impressive. However, this is a major safety hazard, so I need you to fill it up now. And like filling up a hole that big is also like a blast, because then you just get to like dig into it like your
imagine,
dog.
I imagine you climb out of the hole and just like you've got all the sand that you just dug out and you just sort of just push it.
Yeah. Kicking it in with feet.
What if we take the pile of sand and push it somewhere else?
Like, I'm not gonna say if I was also responsible for digging 23 trenches, I wouldn't let anybody forget that I dug 23 wells.
Yeah, and then he eventually sets Clara off, and Clara storms out of the date and goes home to find the doctor there with one of my favorite two of my favorite quotes of the doctor back to back, which is, why do you need three mirrors? Why don't you just turn your head?
I do like his placement because Clara's room is not small. The fact that he chose immediately behind her door
to park the TARDIS.
Just squeeze in a little. Okay.
Well, this is where you come in the room, so it's got to be. But he's like, why do you need three mirrors? Why don't you just turn your head? That feels like something Moffat said to his wife. And he was like, I'm writing that down for later.
Do you think Moffat keeps like a little notepad of funny things?
Absolutely, I do. I think he absolutely just has like a little, I don't know if it's like a physical notepad, but it's I'm sure it's either in his phone or it's a physical notepad or something.
It's a notepad with a golf pencil.
Yeah, he just like writes down like this is a quote good for this person. I'll save it for later. I absolutely think that because there are definitely lines where I'm like, okay, you sat on this until like the moment. This was not something you came up with spontaneously. Like,
that's too funny.
It's too disconnected from. Like they're set up in the story for it, but like that wasn't something that would have naturally occurred. I think like having the doctor sit at her vanity is not, I think, the obvious choice for that scene. But yeah, it's what he chooses to make him do. But I do enjoy the quote immediately later, which is like, I in case you brought your date home, I had to hide in the bedroom, you know, where they definitely won't go after she brings a boy home.
I mean, if I lived alone, I would do things in the living room.
It was just funny to me.
Bedroom is a very intimate space. That is a space only meant for sleeping, Zach. The doctor established that.
It's a room that you just are supposed to miss.
Yeah, it's a room that you're supposed to miss. Therefore, perfect hiding spot. Also, is this to like completely derail and go back to the beginning?
Sure.
Is this the first time we've had a Capaldi monologue?
It was a monologue with slight interruptions in the very first episode, where he was having the conversation with the half-faced man.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that was probably our first monologue. This is our first one, I think, since then, though.
This is the first one I feel like if you were somebody wanting to do a monologue for an audition, you could pluck this one out really well because it's not contextually, you don't need to know what the show is about or who the character really is. You can kind of mold it.
Capaldi has, I think, two. I don't even know if one of them is a monologue, because one of them is I don't want to spoil it, but Capaldi has two like really big speeches that are both next season. So if someone was going to do an audition with a Doctor Who monologue from Capaldi's era, there are two. I think everyone who knows Capaldi's era knows what they are.
Okay. Yeah, it just on my note for it just made me laugh, and it was Doctor Monologue, which would have arguably been Smith, but anyways.
Yeah, I do like that. I do like that he's giving effectively like a teacher's lecture,
yeah,
complete with chalkboard writing, and he's lecturing no one.
He's lecturing himself, or the ghosts in the TARDIS could be talking to the
monster.
TARDIS.
The monster's under the TARDIS bed. If this creature is real and they sleep under the beds, does that mean that when Amy and Rory were in bunk beds, there was just a monster under each bunk?
No, it'd be under the bottom bunk.
Just under the bottom.
The monster under the top bunk is the person sleeping in the bottom bunk.
So the monster under Amy's bed is Rory.
Yeah.
Because Rory definitely is the bottom bunk of those.
Similarly,
two.
When I go traveling with my family, my sister is the monster under my bed. Because she does not like the top. I don't care. A bed is a bed.
Yeah. Then the doctor's like, hey, the doctor basically like autism dumps his new hyperfixation onto Clara. I was like, I want to go see what's under the bed. Let's go find out. Think about your dream real hard. Think about that dream.
Don't get distracted. Are you upset? Too bad.
Second thoughts, too bad.
Yeah, her being like, I would really rather not. And him being like, well, you don't have anything else to do.
Put your fingers in here. If anything bites, good.
And don't get distracted. Bing, bing.
Plug yourself into the TARDIS real quick for me.
Now you're flying the TARDIS. Mike, this is the first time we're ever seeing this tech, but okay.
And it's weird that like the tech looks like a panel of goo.
I loved it. The thing that was upsetting to me was how many panels of goo there were. Mm. It wasn't just one panel of goo. There was like six.
And so
it's just like a bag of Crisco. It's hilarious. But anyways.
And so because Clara can't stop thinking about the date she just stormed out of.
Well, that and also her phone rings. And that was the thing that she said before she even walked onto the TARDIS was, well, what if I get a phone call?
She's got this. She's thinking about Danny. And so instead of going back to her house as a child, she goes to a children's home.
Hmm. A very like nice looking children's home.
Yeah. I mean,
his room had mood lighting. So I assume it has to be like somewhat decent.
And she meets a young Danny who at the time was going by the name Rupert.
That's his name before he changes it.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. Bailey is adding a lot of her own opinions this episode.
Another moment I really appreciated quote from the doctor was when she's like, I've never been to Gloucester and I've never been in a children's home. And he's like, well, maybe you just forgot. Human brains are so small and funny.
Yeah, like, I think I would remember if I lived in a children's home.
Like, this,
my
like,
dude.
The Capaldi's doctor really is just like, what if we took all of the social aphorisms of 11 and made them not cute anymore? Like, he's not, like, 11 was like, oh, I don't remember how humans greet each other. Is it all cheek kissing like the French do? So I'm going to do that. This is like, the doctor seems to think that they're like dumb puppies.
The doctor treats humans the way that cats treat their people. Because I don't know if you knew this. Cats do not look at themselves as like, oh, I am like, you are taking care of me. They look at us like, oh, you're just a big, like, fleshy dummy.
Just picturing now.
You're a big fleshy dummy that you I need to take care of you and hunt and provide for you because you clearly don't know how to hunt.
I'm picturing the 12th doctor now having forgotten to eat dinner. And he just looks at Clara and goes, ah, ah, pointing at his own mouth. Ah,
yeah. You're saying this for 11 or 12
for 12.
12, I feel like just goes like, why am I so hungry? Just gosh. And then Clara going, have you eaten? No.
No, I haven't. Should I?
I should probably should.
But I can't have a hot dog. The image of a hot dog becomes a hot dog.
Zach, we can't. Okay, I mean, you haven't brought it up since. So shout out to Travis. I made it into a sticker that I can send to people in my phone. It's awesome.
Guys, one of my favorite images, which you can find on all of our various social media accounts at WimDPod and all the socials. Anyway,
did you post it on the Instagram?
I did not. That's your prerogative. I did it all.
No, it's not.
You said you wanted to run the Instagram.
Yeah, and then I forgot.
And so they,
Zach, I have another job.
They meet young Rupert, who is currently awake at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that before they even get up to Rupert's room, Clara goes to Rupert's room. Mm-hmm. The doctor is trying to find young Clara, finds a groundskeeper.
Like, he's some employee. It seems like maybe he's a night guard,
but is asking him specifically like, oh, do you talk to yourself alone at night?
He's like, yeah, just the place does that. Place does that to you.
Yeah. Do you put down your coffee and then it. Or he goes like, oh, yeah, I put down my coffee and then it disappears and the TV turns off and he's just like, oh, yeah, it just does that. What the doctor is describing is ADHD. I'm not saying that whatever this like secret hidden monster is ADHD, but I'm not saying that because have you ever seen ADHD? No, but it's always there. Do you know the number of times I've made myself tea and have gone, oh, man, like. I made hot tea.
And now it's iced tea.
I made hot tea yesterday and left it on the stove. And now it is the next day and I have iced tea now.
I mean, I do that all the time. I've done that multiple times, boiling water and forgetting I had the water boiling.
But yeah, I just really like that the doctor's afraid of ADHD. Like, that's
well, I do the realize, irony. Like, does your coffee ever disappear? And the next shot we see of the doctor is him, like, skulking down the hallway, and then he lifts the cup out of frame and takes a big sip of it. He stole that man's coffee and blamed it on a TV ghost.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Less hilarious, though, is Clara and Rupert under the bed, and then suddenly the bed, like,
yeah, sinks down. Oh, yeah. There's somebody else here. No, there isn't.
Nobody else came in. Maybe somebody did, Rupert. You're all children in bare feet. You all are probably very small and quiet. And then they get up out from under the bed, and there's just a shape under the sheets. The shape of a being, a small being. And everyone is afraid of it. Except the doctor, who is looking for Where's Waldo in a book that is not Where's Waldo.
How do you know it's not Where's Waldo? Have you found him yet?
He goes, then Rupert's like, not every book is a Where's Wally. And he's like, wow, well, that's a lot of my time wasted. I want some time back.
You.
I love the idea that the doctor just knows that every book secretly has Wally in it. And Wally or Waldo, depending on where you're from. And maybe he's right. Maybe there is a Waldo in every book and we just don't know it.
I mean, I would do that if I was an author. I would absolutely hide a little guy. You have to find it. A line that I wrote down and I wanted to elaborate and expand on it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear dreams? Zach, what would your dream sound like?
I don't know. I don't remember my dreams.
So your dreams would sound like TV static.
I guess so. It would just because
I do like the idea of like that.
Which I assume is the sound of my brain cooking.
Moving forward, when I'm up very late at night and I'm hearing strange and scary noises, I can just be like, I'm tuned into the network. I can hear everybody's dreams. Meanwhile, all of everybody's dreams is just. There's one time you did one of those heavy breaths in my face because I was just laying there being like, he's so cute when he sleep. And then just hot mouth breath. I went, never mind.
He's so cute and so nice and so horrible. I hate him.
So horrible. I hate him. I want a divorce. We're not even.
I take it back. I think my dream sounds would be.
Oh, I thought your dream sounds were going to be. Snork, me, 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 me. Snork, me, 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 me.
Honk shoe, honk shoe.
Honk shoe. Snork, me, me, me.
It's just the letter Z.
Me, 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 me. Like when Pegasus is asleep in Hercules. Me, 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 We're going to put our listeners to sleep with all of this sleep sounds. So if you could hear my dreams, it would just be... That's me getting kidnapped by Jeffrey Dahmer as a kid.
Maybe my dream sounds like there's a deer in here. There's a deer in here. A deer. Deer.
Again.
Yeah, so the three of them are all looking at this just shape under the sheets, and they're like, what do we do? Do we look at it? They all like turn away.
We're going to promise that we will not look at it. Close your eyes.
Turn around here and look at the window. And Clara's like, look at all the dark, so deep and empty. And it's like, just promise that you won't turn around. And now that we know for a fact that was just a child under those sheets, because that's the lesson of the story is that the doctor was afraid of fear. That's just a child. Can you imagine what it would be like to be that little like 8-year old being like, I was doing like a thing. Y'all are being weird. Mm-hmm.
That's why it ran out of the room and slammed the door.
So I was trying to be like a scary ghost thing and you guys had to do like a philosophy about it.
I'm taking the blanket. This is mine now. Dummies. My other takeaway from that is if we're buying into the previous thought of it's some kind of alien or paranormal being, that it just doesn't want to be perceived. Again, ADHD.
Very antisocial.
I mean, if I was also doing a prank, I would not want to expose it, that it was I that was doing the prank. So I, too, would just skitter out the door as if I was never there.
They make Rupert feel better by giving him a brave man to believe in, Dan the Soldier Man. So Clara unintentionally gives her date his new name.
I mean, that's what he said.
Yeah,
because she designated the one without a gun as the colonel.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh yeah, I just call that one Dan. She was like, wow, that's a really great name.
It's a great name. You should think of maybe a different name. That way I don't want to accidentally make my boyfriend.
I mean, you're meeting him actively.
So the doctor uses his dad's skills to put Rupert instantly to sleep to dream of Dan the Soldier Man. Clara asks if she can come back and like try and rescue her date. And so they pop the TARDIS back and Clara pops her head out and sees herself walking away. And she's like, is that what I look like from the back? And the doctor's like, yeah, it's fine. She's like, I was thinking it looks good. And that's how you can tell Moffat wrote the episode.
Yeah.
Moffat's
an ass man. You know this.
Moffat, there's no trope Moffat likes writing more than women being attracted to themselves. Which, you know, there are worse tropes.
Yeah. That's the most true. If you're going to have a female-based trope, that one's the most authentic.
I mean, I do know a number of women who are like that. I think he uses it almost fetishy in a way, but you know what? Of all the fetishes you could do, it's not Tarantino.
No.
It's not Tarantino putting toes up on camera. Then Clara goes back to her date trying to rescue it, and Danny had made Clara upset the first time, and Clara like stormed out. But this was now the reverse. Clara makes Danny upset
paid the bill.
I don't know.
I guess it doesn't really matter.
I mean, all they got was water, so.
And they got drinks.
I guess they did get drinks. Maybe Danny paid it beforehand.
Yeah.
But Clara brings up his name being Rupert, and Danny gets visibly upset at that, at her knowing that. And I wonder how much. Like, because of the little time travel shenanigans of the first half of the episode,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if Danny is suddenly, like, suspicious of who Clara is to mm-hmm. not just know. Because that would have been a formative moment for Rupert / Danny.
Yeah.
Because that was, it seems to be the moment he chose the name he was going to change.
Mm-hmm. That's at least when the ball started getting rolling.
Yeah, so I would imagine that was a formative experience for him. So he's got to be like, you look just like the girl that showed up in my room at 2 a.m.
When I was, like, 8.
Yeah, when I was like 8 years old. I mean, it's been, you know, 20 years. So it's a little fuzzy. But
you have a very wide face.
The
like
kind of
she did.
The kind of face that needs 3 mirrors. And so the Clara's trying to like trying to explain without explaining. Like, she's trying to find a way to justify how she knows that name. Meanwhile, she's watching a man in an orange like spacesuit wander around the restaurant. She eventually, like, Danny finally storms out and she runs over to find the spaceman, thinking it's the doctor. But then the spaceman takes his helmet off and it's
Danny.
It looks like old Danny. But it's not. It's Orson Pink, Colonel Orson Pink, a time traveler 100 years in Clara's future.
Orson, not at all in the same like vein as Oswald.
Orson, sort of like our son.
Yeah. Huh. Go figure.
And they find out that Orson was a time traveler that was meant to only go 1 week into the future and instead send himself to the end of time.
I like that the end of time is pink.
It decorated itself just for Danny.
Yeah.
And Danny, or not Danny, but for Orson, excuse me. Orson is there and he appears to be freaked out because he's the supposedly the only person left in the universe. And he still keeps the door locked because he is also afraid of the sounds that come. When the station goes to low power,
when the sun goes down,
Clara and Orson get to talking and Orson pulls out a family heirloom and it's the same figure of Dan, the soldier man,
a family heirloom that's in what I can only describe as, you know, those boxes that people get for their laboo-boos to like keep it safe.
It's a little dandan.
Yeah. A little dandan. But it's literally just a like acrylic box with so much padding.
And he's like, yeah, it's a family heirloom. I got it from my great grandparents. And he was like, why don't you have it? He's like, she's like, but you said it was a family heirloom. He's like, exactly. I'm like, ah,
egad.
Wouldn't that be fucked up if it turns out Clara is not his grandmother?
Yeah, but then
he's just decided that she is, and he's like giving this away to a total stranger.
I mean,
the doctor is like, hang on, I want to see what the thing is on the other side of the door. Everyone else get into the TARDIS. I'm going to see what happens when the door opens. And you hear the sonic screwdriver going. And Clara's like, doctor, that's not you opening the door. He's like, no, it's not. Meanwhile, I was like, yeah, it is. You're doing the screwdriver. You're doing it right now.
He unlocked it. I don't think the sonic is capable of physically turning open the door, though.
I mean, as long as it's not wood, it can.
That's
it doesn't do wood.
Stupid.
And you can only imagine how many apps he's installed on that thing.
Ugh. Anyways.
And so they open the door and then Clara runs into the TARDIS and is like, all right, let's see what's going on. And of course, static is like blocking the view. The air shell lets out. So there's just papers flying out of this vacuum as the doctor's doing his little shenanigans of like hanging onto the sidebar as his like legs are dangling out, kicking his little feet.
Mm-hmm.
Orson goes in and save him. And then Clara decides that she's going to try and pilot the TARDIS back to another time and instead winds up in a little farmhouse.
Mm-hmm. With a crying child.
With a boy, why are you crying? That at first she thinks is Rupert. Is not Rupert, as we quickly surmise from the speech of two. I don't know if they're parents or if they're just like adults or what they are.
I think in this case we can just assume that they are adults.
Yeah, I mean,
like caregivers.
Yeah, whoever runs this cabin of children, I suppose.
This cabin of children with a farmhouse with only hay and no other animals in it.
The doctor eats hay. That's what we learn.
The doctor is a bunny.
Because they say that he'll never make it as a Time Lord, which immediately tells us that this is the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
As a young child, and we find out the monster under the doctor's bed is Clara, because Clara reaches out and grabs his ankle.
Says, go back to sleep. You're fine. I would not be fine and able to go back to sleep. I, too, would start crying and covering my face and head.
I think she's also like, this is just a dream. You're having a dream right now. And I do think that if you find a child sleepy enough and like hazy enough, because it seems like that doctor's. That in this scene, a child doctor has been awake for quite a while and has been crying himself
mm-hmm.
To sleep. And so there's a very real possibility. It's like if that child is like dazed enough, you could probably convince him he's already asleep and dreaming.
Yeah.
I do that. You can only get a little. They don't do a lot with the child's face. So you don't really see what the what that character looks like. I do like that they picked a child that seems to have the same kind of curly hair as Capaldi.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to do
it
that.
The kid just kind of had hair.
Yeah. Well, it was just like a little detail where it felt like, okay, we are connecting this back to who the doctor is right now.
But even still, yeah, like
they didn't pick someone who looks like Bill Hartnell. Baby Bill Hartnell.
Well, yeah, it's also at the top of the head, so that's you're doing a heavy dose of reading into things, buddy.
I just feel like these are decisions they would have made in casting. It would have been funny to see Billy the Kid.
It is the top of a child's head, so it truly, I think, was more circumstantial and happenstance.
Yeah, Clara's there giving him a little.
Monologue.
Clara monologue.
Clara monologue. Which I also really liked. I also keened in on to something that, because you have said in the past that you think Clara and the doctor have the dynamic of like an old married couple.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think they have the dynamic of trauma bonded coworkers. Where it's like, I'm going to be really real with you when I need to be really real with you.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I am not going to tell you all of... going to tell you everything about me because there are certain things that you simply don't need to know.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm going to treat you like... The doctor is going to treat Clara like she works for him, even though she is there on her own volition.
I mean, we could split the difference here and say they have the dynamic of a work wife and work husband.
Yeah.
Clara comes into the TARDIS and says, like, you just don't want anyone. Just no one wants needs to know that the doctor is just afraid of the dark. But meanwhile, Clara is like actually having this really kind of touching monologue with baby cabin boy doctor about how, you know, he's going to be afraid a lot. And one day he will come back to this cabin more afraid than ever. And they show you that clip of the war doctor coming up to this cabin
mm-hmm.
before he was going to use the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really nice.
Yeah,
I
like acknowledging
this has got to be my fifth or sixth time watching the episode. And just because it's so like short, it does shock me a little bit every time because it's one of those where it's like, oh, this it doesn't come totally out of left field. But it's just not something you're expecting. Like the pacing of the story doesn't feel like it's going to be doing a callback.
It's something that is not even a blink if you miss it necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but it is something where it's a like, I appreciate when shows are self-aware and tie its present back to its past.
And it adds a bit of meaning to him choosing this cabin because it seems like this cabin is where the doctor chooses to cry.
Well, that and it's also a like then as the viewer, it's not a random choice.
Yeah.
It is intentional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had made a little bit of a choice to it where it was like the doctor picked somewhere in the middle of nowhere because he didn't even want the TARDIS to see him do this. But there's a little bit more sense to it where it's like it wasn't just that. It's like this is not a comfort place, but this is the place the doctor associates with being sad.
It's like if I were anytime I needed to make a big life decision, drove back to my mom's old house,
mm-hmm.
knocked on the door and went, hey, people that are living in my house now, can I please go into the closet in one of the kids' bedrooms? I need to cry and think.
I know Stephen Colbert. I mean, he obviously has a show in New York, but he still has a house in South Carolina, I believe, for that reason. He has that because he feels like he can make better life choices when he feels like he's most on his feet when he's in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hmm.
So there is some truth to that. There are people who just go to a place and you feel like you can make better decisions.
You can just think.
Yeah, you can just think clearer.
Formative places.
And Clara has this notion that fear is a companion. Which I think is a much better way of phrasing it than fear. Fear is a superpower. There's never going to be a moment where you're truly free of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So it is better to embrace it and understand it than it is to run away from it. And then Clara gives the doctor a little Dan the Soldier Man, leaves it with him. I think that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, I liked the episode and then I slipped into just being... When they specifically went into the future with
Orson that's when it started to lose me. But
I think part of it is that the Doctor doesn't get out of character, but it's a very weird tone shift for him, where he's like yelling at Clara that, like, this is the job, me being in danger is the job, and do what you're told. And I'm like,
that, and it's also the, like, we truly haven't spent a lot of time with Dan.
Yeah.
With Dan and Clara together. So there really isn't anything to me that is like, oh man, like, they're such a compatible pair. It's not like,
in fact, they've been on one date and it's gone terribly.
It's not like they did this with Rory and Amy, where it's like, oh, they have established that they've been together for a very long time.
Yeah.
So this, like, oh, I jumped into your past and found one of your future relatives. This is it. It did feel a little bit like it was coming out of left field.
I mean, there is also something just to deal with the shock of being like, I'm on a first date with a guy and now I'm seeing our great, great grandson.
Yeah. I was like, I didn't love that.
Well, that's the thing, is they also don't confirm it. It's just very heavily implied,
which I also don't like, because that's
the coward's way out.
Yeah. That's how you pussyfoot around making a decision.
Yeah.
Is saying, oh, well, I never said this was for certain.
Moffat does get a little cutesy at times with his wibbly wobbly timey wimey bullshit.
Yeah.
But I will. The moment for me that feels really wrong is when Capaldi is yelling out, do as you're told, because if we remember correctly, the reason Matt Smith liked Clara as a companion was that she was the first companion to do as she was told.
I mean, I'm sure that they did that so that way then Clara could turn it around and yell at the Doctor.
Yeah.
To do as he's told.
Yeah, like, it's fine.
Which also didn't need to happen, because earlier we saw her telling the Doctor to sit and stay. So as much as the Doctor doesn't like to admit it, he absolutely will take orders from Clara. Yeah, from Clara.
Yeah.
Which, again, is why I was like, I feel like they have more of the I'm shift supervisor and I'm best friends with my manager, even though, like, there is that power dynamic.
I do think that
we're trauma bonded because we both have narcissistic parents, you know, stuff like that.
I do think it's very interesting, or very, very well done, that the story can take so many horror tones for its first two-thirds, really, because the story is essentially about the Doctor being afraid of something.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, Clara sitting with baby boy Doctor really leaves you on a more uplifting note, I think. I won't say lighthearted, but a more soulful note than I think the first chunk of the episode would lead you to expect.
Yeah.
And I think that's really well done. I think that was worth commending. I don't think this was a good episode to watch with a crowd, but the crowd had no way of knowing that's what the episode was going to be unless they all saw the leaks.
Yeah.
Which, you know, not impossible. I know at least one person who was there who saw the leaks, and it was me. It was a good time. This is an episode that gets better with me the more I watch it.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so it's one of those where it's like the twist in it doesn't make it feel. I feel like there's a part where, like, when you first watch it, the twist feels kind of lame because you expect a monster. But then when you go back and watch it and you know there isn't, you're like, oh, they're explaining how it's not a monster at every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's always like, oh, yeah, that sound is the pipe settling. That sound is the air letting out. That was the handwriting on the chalkboard is the Doctor's handwriting. And he forgot he put that on the chalkboard
again. I think the Doctor is just afraid of his own ADHD, but
because he was too busy monologuing to no one. So I there's a part of me that really appreciates that. Next week, though, we're gonna get to an episode that you mentioned really wanting to see not too long ago. You had mentioned once about wanting to see a heist in Doctor Who, and next week we get to see the time heist.
Yay!
I say not too long ago. I think that might have been literally 100 episodes ago you had mentioned it.
Yay!
We get to see all about what kind of heist you can do through time.
Woo-hoo.
We'll learn about that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? Well, hey there, everybody. Thanks for checking out another episode. I hope you also checked under your bed for either monsters or pretty British women. I'm pretty sure that was the lesson of this episode. Either way, we had a good time, and if you had a good time, be sure you are subscribed wherever you're listening right now. You can also support us over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor. Special thanks, as always, go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, and Daniel Lindgren. Next week, we're robbing a bank. I mean, we're watching an episode about robbing a bank. Yes, that's what I meant. Anything else would be incriminating. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.